okay. I'm Lindsay. I'm still an alcoholic. Super grateful. Thank you, Shorty. Thank you. Super grateful, again, to be here. This obviously was my home group for a very long time. I just moved to New Hampshire in July, and I've been looking for something along the lines of this meeting. It's really hard when you come from Boston AA and you move to a different state. Like, you know, the AA here is just so amazing, especially this meeting. This meeting saved my life. It's been my sobriety date is January 29th of 2018. So I just celebrated 6 years on Monday. Thank you. You know, and that is like a direct result of, you know, working the 12 steps, having a home group, having a sponsor, sponsoring other women, yada, yada. And yeah, it's been a kind of an emotional week for like my family last couple of weeks, because my cousin just overdosed from a fentanyl overdose on like a week ago. So we had a service. I was supposed to go to the Freedom Trail conference and everything this weekend, and we went to the services instead. So it's been crazy. But that's the nature of like my family, right? Like I was just telling Joe, like on that side of my family, on my dad's side, 7 out of 10 of our cousins are really bad alcoholics and addicts. That's like, you know, this is a family illness, and sometimes, you know, some people don't make it. But we get to stay sober and to honor them. And you know, he's definitely with me. So I mean, there's nothing unique about my story, right? Like I was just a kid who was just riddled with fear. I always wanted more. I never had enough. I never felt content. I always wanted, to be somewhere where I wasn't. And that's just how my life was forever. I started even before I had like the isms. I was shoplifting at like age 12 or 11. I had a really bad eating disorder, which landed me in the hospital, Children's Hospital, at age 13, and I almost died from that, and I was put in a psych ward, and that was at age 13, and I was put on Klonopin and Zoloft, and from then on, I've been pretty much running. After that, you know, I picked up drugs, alcohol right away. I started running, and I really was that person that when I picked up alcohol, like I felt like, you know, like I had a plastic bag over my head, and like, you know, for the first time somebody ripped it off and I could take a deep breath. That's like the best analogy I've ever heard. I really like that. It's so true. And when you go around feeling like you can't breathe all the time, and feeling like you just never get enough air, or that you're never treated right, or you have the, you know, that, you know, what, you know, why is this life? Why do you have to live this life? You know, why was I given this life? And like you're slighted, and like you don't have an, like, it just feels so good to be able to take that deep breath. Like you finally get enough air. And I just chased that for a very long time. Drugs is a part of my story, but I'm going to try to stick to alcohol. But I am the type of alcoholic that, you know, like whack-a-mole, right? Like I put one thing down and I focus on, you know, like I'm going to get sober from, like I said, I came here for like a decade, right? So I would like focus on stopping drinking, but then I would start doing another drug, and then I would focus on that drug, and then I would start doing something else. So for me, like that's, the substance is not the issue. Alcoholism is. And the issue was that I was very spiritually, mentally, and physically sick, and that I, you know, was trying to fix it with alcohol and drugs. And when that stopped working, I needed another solution. And it's only been through coming here and doing the 12 steps that I've been able to get some relief from life. So let's see, 10 minutes is so hard. I don't even know. I'll just say a couple things I've learned along the line, because I don't know how to, it's kind of hard when you've had so many relapses to like chronologically tell you the story. Like, I don't even know. You know, I guess some of the most important things that I learned, like when I first started coming to AA, was like, you know, you're only as sick as your secrets, right? You have to get honest about your secrets. One of the other things I learned was like how free do you want to be? Like that's how much that's how much work you need to put in to it. However free you want to be, that's how much work you have to put into this program. And I've really found those things, you know, definitely to be true. And today, like, I want to be really, really, really free. So I try to do as much as I possibly can. The past 2 years have probably been the hardest years of my sobriety. I switched jobs. I got married. I had my son. I had a very complicated end of my pregnancy. Moved states. Moved job. Like, literally everything changed in 2 years. And the fact that, you know, I've been able to stay sober through all that is actually completely a miracle. And I don't know how. I really don't. All I can say is that, you know, through working the steps with the sponsor, I've been able to have a relationship with a higher power that has prevented me from drinking one day at a time. Because for this alcoholic, like, I should not be here. Like, I should be dead. There was times where I was very close to being dead. And it's sad because I've lost a lot of people, including my cousin, who were terminally unique. You know, like, this won't work for me, or I'm special, or, you know, I don't, like, AA won't work for me, you know, this is, you know, I'm too mentally sick, or I'm too this, or I'm too that, and I did that for years, and I almost died over it, and I'm just, it's really sad when you see people pass that never got the opportunity to do this, because, like, we know it's available for them. Yeah. So, hold on, I'm just gonna see how much time I have. Wow. Okay. Let's see. Well, I was always somebody that, like, definitely put in, like, 80% to my recovery, too. And I remember this one sponsor that I was working with, she said to me, "Lindsay, like, you're not getting fully honest about your recovery, right? And you keep relapsing. Like, you're putting, you know, if there was a Coke machine and the Coke cost $1 and you're putting in 99 cents or even 80 cents, like, do you get the Coke?" And I was like, "No." She's like, "That's what you're doing with your recovery. You're putting in 80% and expecting to get the result, which is a spiritual experience, and you're not getting it. So you're just, that's actually harder what you're doing. You're just burning up energy and getting mad and saying that AA doesn't work." And so it was at that moment that, like, for whatever reason, I just heard that, and, like, it was like everything aligned. And I was like, "All right, I'm done. I'm done doing this. Like, clearly, like, my way does not work. Like, I need to start listening to people." And, you know, so I really opened up my ears and really just started to take suggestions. And so, because I knew enough from watching this disease that my ideas were going to get me dead or in institutions. And so super grateful that didn't happen. Super grateful that I have another day of sobriety today. And let's see, what else do I want to say? I just think at this point in my recovery, the most important thing right now is, you know, living in 10, 11, and 12. 10 is definitely the hardest for me. It's especially as, like, a mom now, to stay, like, consciously, you know, like, watching your thoughts and turning your direction. Like, it's actually been the most challenging step for me, for sure. And I'm challenged in a whole new way now. But and 11 and 12, like, I live in that every day. And I think that's what's been able to keep me sober the last couple of years, for sure. Sponsoring other women has been definitely the bright spot in my life, even though every time I'm like, "Oh, I don't want to go do step work." But every time I go afterwards, I feel so much better. Like, every time I go on a commitment, like, I really do, I feel so much better. And, you know, I just, like, was looking for purpose in my life for so long, like, through drinking and through drugging, and I could never find it, really. And so it's like, you know, this is my purpose. Like, this is what fuels me. And, like, when you know that, like, you can live one day at a time and take certain steps that you wouldn't have taken otherwise. Like, this is my passion, and this is what I love to do. And I'm super grateful that I learned it from this meeting. I'm super grateful that I get to be here tonight and celebrate with you guys, and look forward to hearing Joe speak. Thank you.
Thank you, Lindsay. We will now observe the seventh tradition. AA has no dues or fees for AA membership, but we do have expenses. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA's usual suggestion is a $2 contribution per meeting. We are passing the basket, but You may also observe the seventh tradition digitally on Venmo. Our Venmo handle is @beacon-group. Again, although there are no dues or fees for AA membership, we do have expenses. Our rent is $200 per month. Please give what you can and see our treasurer, Megan, with any questions. She's not here right now. We thank you in advance for your generosity. AA also has a set of traditions which apply to the group in the same manner that the 12 steps apply to the individual. Tonight, Mary Ann has been asked to read the 12 traditions.
No, I don't have to memorize.
I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. Hi, I'm Mary Ann. I'm an alcoholic. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority. A loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Mary Ann. Beacon Group is run by a business meeting, which meets on the third Wednesday of each month immediately following the speaker meeting, both here at Temple Beth Zion and online. This is your opportunity to get more involved. All group members are encouraged to attend and participate. We hope you can join us. Will all group members please raise their hands? Okay. And now let's welcome our main speaker, Joe R.
Hey guys, I'm Joe. I'm alcoholic.
Hi, Joe.
It's good to be here tonight. Congratulations to the three ladies that celebrated tonight. I know them well. If you're a woman in the room and you need a sponsor, one of those three will definitely do. for sure. You know, man, my sobriety date is July 21st, 2009. My home group is here, and, you know, and I'm super grateful for that. I joined Beacon at a very, very, very tough time in my life, and people in here were very kind and very welcoming to me, and I'm super grateful for that. You know, I was talking to somebody earlier today, and I was, like, reminiscing, like, just dumb things I did as a kid, right? And I don't know if that was, like, my alcoholism or not or whatnot. But anyways, like, I moved as a kid, and I moved in, like, the eighth grade, and I was, like, trying to make friends, and my friends and some kids came up to me and told me they were drinking before the middle school dance, and I lied to them, and I told them, I drink all the time. And so I went out, and we drank, and we went to the dance, and it was awesome. You know, it was great. I could, like, talk to the girls. I could, like, shoot the shit with the guys. Like, it was good. And And from that moment on, alcohol had, like, an obsession in my mind. Now, I didn't know that then, but, like, I can look back and know that now, right? Like, it was, like, finding the creepy dude to buy us booze on the weekend, right? Like, saving my lunch money to, like, have enough money to buy the booze, right? Like, all of those things. And, like, well, like, had to happen, right? And, my drinking didn't have consequences for a while, right? Like, at the time, like, my parents were going out, were trying to save a marriage, so they were, like, trying to do, like, date nights and stuff, and, like, it was great for me, because I could just, like, have a party at my house, right? Like, they'd go out, I'd have a party at my house, I'd have, like, my little brother on the lookout, and we'd, like, party in the basement, they'd come in, we'd sneak out the bulkhead, run right down to the beach, and, like, keep drinking, right? And I found out, like, early on that, like, if I could, like, check the boxes, then I could, like, drink the way I wanted to drink, right? Like, if I, like, kept my grades up, or if I, like, made it home for curfew, or, like, if I didn't get in trouble at school, like, no one would, like, for the most part, no one would, like, comment on my drinking, right? And like, I rolled with that for a long time, man. Like, I remember, like, watching, like, a couple buddies getting, like, suspended and expelled for, like, fighting with teachers, and I was like, this dumb. Like, I just nodded off in the back of the class, and, like, I ain't torture the teacher, and he ain't torture me, and, like, we went about our day, and, like, it was great. And, I'd make it home for curfew. My parents would go to sleep. I'd sneak out the bulkhead. I'd, like, steal their car and, like, drive. I was, like, 15, too. I shouldn't have been driving. But I'd steal their car and, like, drive around, like, Revere and Winthrop and East Boston and, like, drink all night, right? Like, but I made it home for curfew, and, like, that's just the type of drunk I was right from the bat. And by the time I'm, like, a sophomore in high school, I got, like, teachers and guidance counselors and, like, principals and I went to a Catholic school, so there's, like, some priests floating around. And they would ask me if, like, I had a problem with drugs and alcohol, and I'd be like, I think you're crazy. And eventually, like, stuff would happen, right? Like, they went through that divorce, right? And then, like, my mother had a bunch of jewelry that my dad gave her. And I'm like, she don't need that jewelry because, like, that's weird. My dad gave it to her. So I, like, helped myself to it and pawned it, right? And, I'd do things like that. And, like, I was a young alcoholic and addict with, like, not enough money to support my stuff. So, like, I would do anything I had to do for, like, the next drink, right? Like, anything I had to do. Like, I grew up with morals and values that, like, you didn't steal, you didn't lie, you didn't cheat. And, like, those went out the window, right? And, so at, like, some point, sophomore year of high school, I, like, copped to having, like, a problem with drugs, right? Just the drugs. And I rode that way for a while, right? Like, they put me in, like, an adolescent, like, day program. They gave me a meeting list book. I circled them. Like, I treated it like school, man. I was like, let me just check the boxes, right? So I circled the meetings near my house, right? I'll go to those. I went to a couple of them. You guys were talking about losing jobs, wives, houses, and careers. And, like, I was worried about going home to study for a science test. And I knew, I might ruin it for some people. I knew the day at a time thing was kind of a lie. Like, I knew you meant, like, forever. And, like, that was not happening, right? Like, and especially with booze. Like, especially with booze. Like, yeah, I should probably stay away from the opiates and, like, all the other stuff I put up my nose. But, like, I'm going to figure out this drinking thing. Like, I'm going to figure that out. And I fought for my right to drink for, like, the next couple of years, man. And, like, I'd, like, be able to hold it together, and, like, that, like, the time I'd be able to hold it together would get shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter, and, like, they would describe to me as here as jackpots. Like, I'd get in these, like, jackpots, right? And, like, I had this, like, counterfeit money situation that happened that was not great with the Secret Service on my door, right? Like, I actually started to go to AA around, like, the time I was graduating high school, and I was a hot mess, and I went on, like, a senior class trip and, like, was, like, blackout running through the Bahamas from a cabbie that, like, I owed money to, but I had no more money left because I, like, drank and gambled it all away, and ended up getting, like, beat up by people on the trip for, like, stealing their money. It was, like, a whole thing, and came home from, like, a week trip after, like, 72 hours, right? And that was just booze. That wasn't even anything else, when I came home from that trip, it was a pretty dark place. Like, I had no more I had no more, like, crews or running buddies. It was, like, alone in my room by myself drinking, right? Like, and, like, all the other stuff that came with it. So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't sure if I was alcoholic or not. Like, I just didn't. I had nowhere else to go. And, like, the people in AA were super kind and super nice to me. And, you know, and that was in May. And I went to AA almost every day from May until February and couldn't stay sober for more than, like, 48 hours. And it was, like, miserable. And, like, I, like, at some points, like, I would, like, be so full of shame and guilt and remorse, like, I wouldn't be able to tell you guys I was still drinking, so I'd have, like, made-up sobriety dates and get the made-up chips to go with the made-up sobriety date and, like, this whole, like, thing in my head of, like, what was going on. And you guys are just super nice and super kind to me, man, and I'm, like, so grateful for that, man. And, you know, I'd come in here high, hungover, dope sick, like, smelling like booze, smelling like other things, like, looking like a hot mess, and no one ever kicked me out, man. And every once in a while, I'd, like, raise my hand and say some, like, outlandish shit stuff, and no one would ever, I'm gonna try. I can promise not to say the F-bomb. I don't know how else I'm gonna go everywhere else, but, you know, it was rough, and, I had a sponsor, and then, like, every time I'd call that sponsor, he would, like, put me on hold and then, like, call me back in 10 minutes. And what I found out he was doing is, like, I don't think I was asking anything too, like, crazy. But what I found out he was doing is he was, like, calling his sponsor to, like, run something by him to then call me back. And I never enjoyed, like, a middleman. So I just, like, got rid of him and I, like, went around him and got his sponsor. Right. And man, I didn't like him. But the reason why I didn't ask him at first is because I didn't like him. He was a crusty old timer. He was, like, super blunt and, like, right to the point. And would never like, he talked at every meeting, every single meeting I went to. I would go to meetings in Winthrop. And if you don't know Winthrop, it's like a little peninsula. They have an AA meeting every day. Every day it's a different type of meeting. And I'd go to meetings in Winthrop. And, like, so it's, like, the same people, basically. And every week, every night, I'd hear this guy. And he'd, like, different variations of exactly the same thing. But now I'm, like, stuck with him to be my sponsor because, like, I'm not going to deal with the guy that doesn't know anything. I got to get the other guy. And because I'm so important that, like, I need this, right? Like, that's really what it was. And man, I don't know. After, like, 3 months of calling him and giving him nonsense, I finally, like, got honest and was like, hey, man, I've been drinking. And he's like, no crap. We know, like, you're 74 pounds. No, I wasn't that small, but it was rough. And I was like, I don't know what to do. I can't stop. And he started giving me suggestions, right? And I think Kelsey shared about this Monday night, actually. I was that yeah, but guy, right? Like, I was that yeah, but. You know, he would hit me with something. I'm like, yeah, but I know. But listen, hear me out. And he stopped me dead in my tracks. And he said, and he was an older guy. He's like, the most precious thing I have in my life is time. And you don't have permission to waste it. He's like, if you're going to call me and you're going to ask me for help and you're not going to listen to what I'm saying, then, like, I'm not going to give you what you're asking for. He's like, I'll say hi to you and stuff. But he's like, I'll take someone else's phone call. And the next thing he said to me was, like, listen, you've been coming here for, like, 9 months. Like, we've given you all of the instructions. Like, it's on you to, like, do something about it. And I was, like, the perpetual victim, right? Like, I was, like, if it wasn't for this person, I wouldn't have been there. And if I didn't end up there, like, I wouldn't have done this. And, like, if this wasn't going on, I wouldn't have acted that way, right? It was always about, like, outside, like... And that's how I treated my AA, right? It's like, I can't get sober because of X, Y, and Z, and this, that, and the other thing. And he put it right back on me. Like, that, like, it was a me problem. That it was 100% a me problem, right? And so I took his suggestions, right? He told me that, like, I should probably move out of my parents' house and, like, into, like, some sort of sober living. And I did that, right? And I moved to a sober house in Malden that was, like, a legitimate sober house. which at the time, I don't know if anyone was like, it was 06. That was 06. And there was like a rush of sober houses and they were real rough. But this woman ran like a tight ship, man. When I got there was like a guy in a room with a girl and another guy smoking a cigarette on the couch. And I'm like, this doesn't seem right. And I went to bed and I woke up and I never saw those guys again. Their stuff was packed. I've never saw them again. So I was like, okay, she means business. And I knew like my dad didn't have the heart to kick me out. But I knew once I was out, he wasn't going to let me back in if I was a dumpster fire. So I was like, all right, here we go. I was presented with like an all-inclusive program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm very grateful for that. And like, for me, what that meant was like, if I wanted to be in Alcoholics Anonymous, to achieve sobriety, you had to be in AA. And to be in AA meant that I had to have a home group. I had to have a sponsor. I had to have a service position in my home group, right? I had to get involved in the literature. And I had to be at my home group a half hour early and stay a half hour late. We weren't like a big fellowship group, but you had to be there at least a half hour early and stay a half hour late, right? The meeting before the meeting of the meeting after the meeting. My group had commitments, like I was expected to go on those, right? Like, it was just what we did, right? And like, we got involved in literature right away. It was like, this is the steps here, we do them, right? It wasn't like a big deal. It wasn't like this, like no one put any expectations on them either, which I'm super grateful for. Like, they let me have my own experience with them. Right? They weren't like, these things are going to change your life. They were just like, we do this here. And like, let's see what happens. Right? And like, because like, honestly, if they told me that they were going to change my life, find God, and like, make me good, I was all set. I was 18. Like, I was petrified that you guys were going to like, try to make me into like, a saint. Like, screw that. I want to be like a human. Right? Like, that's what freaked me out the most about this place. And like, people let me be what I was going to be, man. And I'm grateful for that. I really am. And I started doing the things and I started getting the results, right? And like, for me, these principles in this program, like if worked properly, like, and can really be great. But like, if I just tweak them a little bit, it can go from like ego deflation to ego inflation, right? And I can be like the only person that ever got sober at 18. And I could be like the sharpest tool in the shed, right? Like, and I could be like the service warrior, and I can get these all these things that can happen. Right. And that's what happened. Right. And I mean, I was the hot dog maker at a men's meeting. Right. I'm going to tell the hot dog story. Right. I there's people in this room that have heard that could tell my story myself. We're going to change it up on the second half, but these ones are good. The guy came in, made fun of me about the cheap hot dogs, right? I threw the hot dogs at him, told him to make his own effing hot dogs, and left. And then I was the bookie at an open speaker meeting. And you know how it is. We have the problem here, right? No one likes to go on commitments. And someone like made an outlandish suggestion about us getting more commitments, and I went off the rails, and I ripped up the calendar, and I left. It's like, you guys don't go on them anyways. You want me to get more? Right? So that happened. And a week later, I ended up on a Winthrop Elks ski trip. While I did go to AA in Winthrop, I wasn't from Winthrop. I wasn't an elk, and I never skied, right? I had no business going on this trip, but I was like chasing around a girl who like I didn't want a sober boyfriend, but I was gonna convince her she did, and I decided to be her drunk boyfriend, right? And I picked up a drink that weekend, and I went on a 6-month run that was like the worst run of my life, right? I was a week before my 30th anniversary, and now instead of like cracking up mom and dad's car or like stealing checks out of the back of their checkbook, like AA has given me a bunch of things. And like for me, once I pick up a drink, everything I have is just fuel to get the next drink. So like I'm like buying TVs at Best Buy to like bring them over to Flacco's house to like get what I need to get. To like I'm like trying to be like a club kid because I never had a legal drink. And now I'm like, I'm going to make the legal drink work. And like I tried that for like about a week and a half. And I was like, forget this. Like, and I told myself the same lie I told myself when I was a 15-year-old kid. Like, I'll just stay away from the other stuff. I'll just drink. I'll be okay. And, like, within 3 weeks, like, I'm right back to where I left off, right? And I'm, like, looking in the mirror, and I want to die. And, like, I hate the people I want to like I'm hanging with, and I hate the things I'm doing, and I have like a visceral reaction. Like I can't even enjoy it anymore. Like I know, like head full of AA, belly full of booze, right? They talk about that in here, and that's where I was, man. And I talked to that sponsor guy for a while, like almost like 4 days a week. And never once did he like hit me over the head with a big book. Never once did he belittle me for drinking. Like he kept the line of communication open, man. And I called him one day. I called him July 20th, 2009. And I was like, I want to go to detox. And I was at my funeral home, right? I have a funeral home. And I got back from a service and I was all like messed up on it. And I called him and he's like, I'm outside. I was like, you're outside. He's like, I'm literally at the red light. And I don't know, man. I don't believe in coincidences, dude. If he told me, like, I'll pick you up in 3 hours, I probably would have figured out a way that, like, maybe I jumped the gun again. Because, like, the thought of calling him was creeping in a lot over the last couple weeks. And he picked me up, and he took me over to MGH to get medically cleared for detox, and, like, that was a nightmare, and, like, whatever. But I got to detox, and I was, like, the happiest guy in detox, man. Because I knew Alcoholics Anonymous worked, right? And, you know, and I go to detox, and, like, I come out of detox, and, I go to this Sunday night Orion Heights group, and I helped start that meeting. And I had to get a 24-hour chip from a kid I didn't like. But I had more time than him at one point. So, like, in the hierarchy in my mind of AA, like, it was whatever. But now I got to get a 24-hour chip from him, right? And I got to, like, swallow that pride and ego and, like, go up and get that 24-hour chip, right? And, like, when we say there's no shame to get a 24-hour chip, if you got as many 24-hour chips as I have, like, there's a lot of shame in that, you know, inside, right? There shouldn't be, but there is. I have alcoholism. It's here, right? And that's, like, what it tells me. So I got a 24-hour chip. Then some old-timer asked me if I had fun while I was out there. And that was not probably a good... My reaction wasn't great. Leave it at that. So I run over to my sponsor's house and I tell him about like my TLOOs and I'm like diarrhea of the mouth, like he can't even get a word in. And all of a sudden I hear like a thump, and it was a meetingless book that he like threw at me. And he's like, if you have a hard time being a newcomer at these meetings, like there's a whole book here, find a meeting because you're a newcomer again. And I took his suggestion, and I knew a pretty girl that went to Cambridge Young People's. And I was like, I'm not going to Cambridge Young People's. Sounds great. And man, I tried Young People's meetings before, and they, like, freaked me out, man. It, like, freaked me out to be in a room of, like, my peers and, like, same results, right? And I'm like, but it's slightly better than, like, what I was doing, and, like, I can't go to those meetings anymore, and, like, so let me try this. So I started going to, like, the circuit, right? Like, yeah. Man, I started going to CYP, FNYP, BYP, all of those, right? Tuesday night, Brookline Tuesday night, Thursday night, the Old Willing to Believe on Isabella, right? And I had like a routine. And Monday nights, I did an AWOL. Monday nights, I did an AWOL. Sunday night was my off night, I guess, call it that. You know, so I built that routine. Right? I had a meeting every day, right? And I was in communication with my sponsor, and, like, Monday nights we did step work, right? And like, you guys invited me to fellowship. I turned you down a bunch of times. Eventually, I got mad that I didn't get invited again. I then forced myself into fellowship because I get, like, real resentful very quickly. And I think I'm very important. So, my buddy Timmy, like... kept on asking me to go to fellowship, kept on saying no, didn't ask me 1 week, I got mad, and then I showed up the next week, and I've been friends with Timmy ever since, you know. In that dirty, disgusting church basement in Cambridge, I met some of the people that, like, are closer to me than any other people in the world. Those people that, like, I got sober with in early sobriety, like, the few that are left, because there's only a few left, right? I'd bury a couple of them just left, right? They're my closest friends, right? And it started a journey on, like, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Because, like, my God works through you people, right? I have a real hard time, like, figuring all this stuff out without outside help, right? And you guys are my outside help. So, like, I spent my first year in sobriety in, like, a sober frat house. That was unbelievable. It was, like, an apartment in Cambridge where, like, I walked in the first night and they were, like, smoking hookah and, like, playing cards. And I didn't know what... I grew up in East Boston, guys. They're not smoking hookah over there, right? So I'm like, they're smoking weed and staying sober. This is crazy. This is crazy. Let me see what's going on. So that was, like, incredible, dude. And from there, like, I got introduced into, like, service, man. I've done, like, I did, like, the young people stuff, right? And I got on a host committee, and that was, like, really cool. And I got on an advisory, and that was cool. And I got involved in the general service, right? And I got involved in an AA commitment that, like, started in 2012 and didn't end until 2019. I could barely, like, commit to high school, right? And, like, I was able to, like, commit to something in AA for 7 years and, like, get it done. Like, that ain't me, right? Like, that's doing the work in here to, like, make sure that, like, when I say I'm going to be somewhere, I'm there, right? When I say I'm going to do something, I do it, right? I, like, suit up and show up today to the best of my ability. And, like, I've had some, like, real dark times in sobriety, like, real dark. I've been the brokest I've ever been in my life sober, right? I've had career changes that, like, were unnecessary, but I did it and, like, gave it a shot and, like, fell on my face. And, like, people in AA were there to, like, pick me up and dust me off and, like, put me back in the right direction, right? You know, and I get that, like, faith to be able to, like, take these leaps sometimes because, like, of the 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, man, like... I have the ability now to, like, identify my alcoolism, right? Like, I have alcoholism, right? So I have the mental obsession, a physical compulsion, and a spiritual loss of values, right? And, like, when I'm drinking, it's really easy to, like, identify that stuff, for me at least, right? Like, listen, I was always thinking about drinking, and when I wasn't drinking, I was always thinking about not drinking, and once I picked up, there was no stopping me, and, like, I sold anything that wasn't nailed to the floor, so, like, the spiritual loss of values was very easy to figure out. What the 12 steps helps me do now is, like, identify my alcoholism as it manifests in other ways, right? And, like, that voice in my head that tells me, like, I'm not good enough, I can't do it, blah, 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 like, that's my alcoholism, right? Or, like, that voice in my head that says I should, like, act on impulse and, like, fill the void, like, that's my alcoholism, right? And so because of the tools that, like, and good sponsorship, like, I've been able to, like, do some really cool things that, like, I never thought I would do. And, like, a lot of them didn't really work out that great, to be honest. And, like, that's okay. I learned in here from you guys that, like, there is no good reason for me to drink today. Like, I can get through anything in my life today and not pick up a drink. And that's, like, an absolute miracle, man. And I celebrated, like, some of the greatest joys. I celebrated things that, like, were on that, like, I never thought I would get, right? Like, never thought I'd be married, never thought I would have a kid, never thought, like, I'd have friends the way I do today, all because of you guys, right? And man, like, dude, I'm gonna skip out. Like, at a year sober, I walked into my office and my dad tried to kill himself. And the first person I called is someone in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And they helped me get through that. And I see that guy every day from time. I see that guy from time to time. And it's been 13 years. Every single time he asks me how my dad's doing. You don't meet people like that anywhere. I told the guy a story 13 years ago. And to this day, when he sees me, he knows exactly about that story. And he's not asking, like, in judgment or anything. He's asking, like, genuinely. Right? Like, those are the relationships I find in Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? And man, I had my sister overdosed. I, like, forgot about that. My first Father's Day. Right? He was born, right? Yeah. You know? And I was there, right? And I get to show up, right? Whether I want to or not. And, like, sometimes I don't, man. Like, sometimes I still, like, I want to act like a child and, like, run in the closet and pull the covers over my head and leave me the F alone. But because of you guys and calling me out on my nonsense and, like, kicking me in the butt to get up and show up, like, I do. because it's not me by default. Like, I want to flip everybody off and, like, be like, I'm all set. I'm doing me. Like, that's my default. And the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous make me a better version of me than I ever wanted to. And sometimes, to be honest, I don't like it. Like, sometimes I want to, like, act like an animal. Like, sometimes I want to be able to tell someone exactly what I think of them. Right? And, like, have no regret about it. Right? But then I watch people that don't have a program. I have a couple people that should have a program in my life that don't. And I watch the chaos that they cause. And it makes me super, super grateful that I have one. You know? And that's all I got tonight. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Joe. We encourage all attendees to...